The Sand Geeks. We are the Sand Geeks.
Hello, geeks. Welcome to episode 76 of the Sand Geeks podcast. Now, this podcast is proudly sponsored by Kajal Perfumes. You can go and check those guys out at kajalperfumes.com. And don't forget to use our discount code. That is Geeks10, and that will give you 10% off any of your purchases. And yeah, as far as I know, they ship pretty much everywhere and they've got stock in the UK, so lead times are pretty good, so go and check them out. Anyway, enough sponsor talk. My name is Steve. I've got a little YouTube channel called Frags to Riches, but I am not alone. I am joined by a YouTube sensation, that is Chris from the channel Fragmental. Chris, how are you?
I'm all right, mate. When you said I've got a little, I thought you were going to say I've got a little friend here called yes. Chris.
Special friends. You should have said you are sensational. But there we go.
Sensational.
Oh, yes.
Should be the name of a channel. I'm sure someone's got it.
There must be a YouTube channel called Sensational. There's got to be.
Every pun alive. Well, I think every pun alive that exists that can be applied to fragrance and scent and all that has already been done. But then someone will bring out a new channel and there we go. There's a new pun. So I love it. I love looking for these new channels.
I was going to say that. Every time I think, that's it, it's done now. And then somebody comes out, it's like, oh, okay, fair play. Not heard of that one. It's getting more and more inventive. But yeah, that's so true. But anyway, how are you? You all right?
I'm really good, thanks. Yeah, had a nice weekend. Went to my mum and dad's over in Bolton for the first time in, 6 months, really. We were last there around Christmas time, so it was good to, and there were all sorts of, you know, restrictions at that point, so it was nice to go over. It was my dad's birthday, so it was good to get out over there and see them again. So yeah, it's been a lovely reinvigorating weekend, and a pretty decent week as well. I've been investing a bit more time into starting to edit my content for my second channel that I don't know when I'm going to launch it. I want to get a few videos in the bank first, but I'm finding it difficult to keep the Fragmental content rolling out at the same rate and then putting the time into the new channel, because I'm trying to learn a new editing program at the same time, so it's taking me longer than it would normally.
Why are you learning new editing? Are you switching both channels over to the new editing software, or is it just for this particular channel you want to do things, or?
Definitely for this new channel, I just edit on iMovie, which has been fine. You know, you can pretty much do most cuts that you'll see that you see say in a film at the cinema or on TV. It's just cuts. There's no fancy titles, transitions, dissolves. But on YouTube, you can sort of jazz things up a little bit and put those funky little edits and, you know, titles in, motion tracked titles, things like that. You can't do fancy stuff like that with iMovie, and I've never really felt that I need to. But with the new channel, I really want to just... I've always wanted to learn a professional editing program, and Final Cut Pro is sort of on the edge of being a professional. You know, professionals do use it, actually. And I just feel like I love my editing, and people always mention my editing, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm on iMovie. But I don't want to say that anymore. I'll say, yeah, Final Cut Pro. That's my bag.
Yeah, but that's almost more credit to you to get those sort of results from iMovie. I mean, I've never used iMovie, so I've not got really a reference to kind of what it's like. But yeah, I mean, if you're getting such good results from iMovie, I mean, that's more credit to you. But then I guess think what sort of results you can get from a sort of higher end editing software, really. So
yeah. The main differences really are in the color grading. Really, you've got much more scope to grade in Final Cut Pro. It's very basic adjusting saturation, exposure. We won't go into the details, but yeah, you can do more. You can make your footage potentially look better, basically, in Final Cut Pro. So that's one of the main reasons. And titles on iMovie, you're very restricted. This fine, but every time I see you know them now. Every time you see someone on YouTube do a title, I know that it's just an iMovie title, and I don't want people to look at mine and go, "Yeah, that's an iMovie." You know, I want to have I want them to look a bit better, really.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because there's a fine line. Because like I use PowerDirector for mine, so which is very much it's all right. I think it's basically sort of home use. I think there might even be an advanced version, but it's just home use editing, so it's kind of like it's all right. It's kind of paid for, but it's, you know, a bit more kind of casual user type stuff, but it does it for me. Mm. But there's a fine line between getting, like, sometimes if you've not got the software to do it, it's better to keep it a bit more simple and it'll look sort of more classy and simplistic and more effective than if you sometimes, I see some channels or whatever where they've clearly tried to up the ante or do something snazzy with the editing where actually it looks a little bit cheesy and cheap. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, yeah, there's that fine line where you kind of go, okay, that's a bit basic, I'll just make it look a bit snazzy, and then it's like, okay, does that look cooler or does it look tackier? It's like you're dancing on the edge.
For me, the key thing about editing is timing. It's knowing when to cut and making an effective cut and keeping a rhythm in your speaking and a rhythm in the video so that it flows. For me, that is the key thing with editing. That is the biggest skill I think you can learn with editing. The most important skill anyway. That's editing at its most fundamental. Everything else is just sort of sprinkles and.
Well, the thing is as well, like editing's a bit like the referee in a football match. If you're doing a good job, you almost don't really notice that it's edited, exactly. Does it? Because it flows. It doesn't offend your eyes. It's all smooth. You don't go, oh, it's that's a bit choppy, or the cut there. It's kind of like it just looks really nice. Yeah. And it's funny, and we've discussed this before, as somebody, I wouldn't class myself as an editor, but as somebody that does edit videos, you can look with different eyes actually when you watch other YouTubers. You can go, oh, I can see what they've done there. But yeah, most life, I think that editing thing reminds me of an analogy Eddie Izzard did years ago. I used to really like his stand-up comedy, but he was talking about fashion, and he was saying like fashion is like a circle where there's like you imagine like a full 360. So you kind of start off, you're quite safe, is simplistic, and then you're quite cool, you're getting a bit cool, and then it's like, oh, that's a bit daring, a bit risky, and then it's like, oh, you're looking like a dickhead, and it's kind of, you go all the way around this circle. That's editing, really. It's like, okay, that's a bit boring, but that's safe, but quite cool. Oh, that's quite cool. Oh, that's a bit. Oh no, you've gone too far. That's ridiculous. It's kind of like that.
But let me tell you, iMovie's a great program. I could stick with it. For anyone who's thinking of getting into editing and you've never done it before, if you maybe starting a YouTube channel, or you're just editing stuff you're filming personally, iMovie's a brilliant program. I mean, there's a lot you can do in it. I'm just saying that for my personal needs, I'd like to explore something else. But I mean, the jump from iMovie to Final Cut Pro is like, it's mind-boggling. Mm. The complexity of
it's daunting, isn't it? When you start looking at the software,
that's why it's taken me so long to do. Because it's daunting. So I thought, right, start of a new channel. This is the time to tackle it head on. But unfortunately, it takes a lot of time to learn it. So.
Okay, I'm going to move on. So, but before we sort of this becomes the editing podcast, just a quick one. What frame rate do you film in?
So I want to have like a cinematic look. So I film I film in 24p.
Ah, okay. I was wondering that. Yeah, so I normally do 25 because we're getting too geeky now, but we can talk about this offline. But that's the thing. It's interesting because that's what a lot of people don't kind of get, is the different frame rates. But then, anyway, and time for another another time on that one, I think. So,
yes.
my weekend was good. In response to the question that didn't come, I've been strawberry picking today, which was quite cool. So,
very nice.
So that's quite nice. So we had some nice strawberries and meringue for dinner. But other than that, let's talk about fragrances.
strawberry fragrances. You got a favourite strawberry frag?
I haven't. I don't think I'd like strawberry in a fragrance.
No, it's not a common note. There's only one I can think of, and it's imaginary author's Cape Heartache, and that is strawberry balanced with green camphorous piney notes. And it's beautiful. It's really, I love it. It's great.
I don't know how I feel about strawberry. Strawberry, it's like, for me, it's a bit like cherry. There's not many cherry fragrance. Like, if I see cherry in a fragrance, I would normally go, nah. And I've said this about L'Homme, Guerlain's L'Homme Ideal EDP. Like, if I look at the notes on that, I'd be like, nah, almond, no, cherry, no. Like,
all right.
But that's a prime example of where I would have just completely missed out on a treat there, because it's only because Barry sent me a sample and I smelt it. I was like, oh, shit, this is good. But I wouldn't, no way I would have blind bought that. I probably wouldn't have even, I might have tried it in store, but I wouldn't have gone out of my way to smell that looking at the note breakdown.
Yeah, I love that accord, that cherry almondy,
yeah, sort of cherry, really well
amaretto sours style smell. I just think it's really nice. Really,
it's great in that fragrance with the leather. It works an absolute treat. I've not worn that for a while. I need to wear that fragrance.
Yeah, me neither.
No, interesting point. Shall we do... I can't even remember which way we down to do it now. Should we do some arse, or do you want to do what you've been wearing?
Show me a bit of arse, Steve.
I'll show you. Let's delve into some arse. So for anybody that missed last week's episode, we're now calling this section the audience recognition section, or arse for short. The section formerly known as Podmin, which people didn't like the name of, us included, it turned out. So yeah, we've now called this arse. Anyway, I'll start with a Ko-fi. We've actually had a Ko-fi this week, which is it's rare. Our Ko-fi account is gathering dust there. There's not much going on in that account, to be honest. So we would love it if you could buy us a Ko-fi. If you go to ko-fi.com/thescentgeeks, all one word, you can donate as little as £3, and we put that to hosting fees, etc. So Anton Constanel, who's a he regularly visits our arse. It's not the first time he's been in the arse.
Oh, why did we have to call this?
It's so carry on. It's such a carry on film, isn't it?
We'll get bored of it.
We'll just change it in
a few weeks. We'll just be calling it ARS or arse, but just not making any jokes.
Or the AR section. We'll call it the AR section.
Yeah. Our childish humour will dwindle at some point.
Wear off pretty quick. Yeah, but anyway, Anton says 75 episodes in and still loving the podcast. You guys make Monday a day to look forward to. Question. I'm considering starting a podcast, not a fragrance podcast, but something else. Any tips? I mean, the first thing I said,
get a microphone.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. Get a decent condenser microphone. I mean, you don't have to spend £1 million, but a decent microphone obviously makes a difference when it's purely an audio-based format.
Do a test, I would say. Do a test podcast, which we should have done, Steve, because our first one was abysmal. In terms of the quality, because it was on Skype, wasn't it?
It was recorded on Skype. I think I was on my phone. It was not great quality, but it was more we was testing the format more than anything, weren't we? And if it could work, but the quality I'd like to think has come on. We've had a few issues and glitches, but on the whole, we're kind of not too bad on the old quality side of things. I'd say that's probably the biggest thing. And make sure you've got a decent connection, restart routers and things before you start recording, and make sure nobody's on.
That's if you're hooking up with somebody else. Yeah, if it's something you're just doing on your own, then obviously you don't need to worry too much about your internet connection.
Yeah, that's about it, really. I mean, I guess the end of the day is do something that you enjoy, and so you can be a bit passionate about it, and then that'll probably come through when you're talking.
And think about what your voice is. Think about what it is that you want to say, that you want to put out there, that will be of value to the listeners. So Steve and I sort of just took a punt on people maybe being interested in some of the geeky frag talk that we have about fragrances and about the fragrance community that we were sort of having through the week anyway. So we just thought, well, let's just take this sort of friendly pub blokes in a pub banter and bring it into a podcast. So that's our plan. That's always been our the thing that we focus on. So if you're starting a podcast, think about what it is, what your unique selling point is, and why people might tune in and listen. So have something to focus on, so it gives you some direction in the podcast.
Good advice, Christopher. Shall we go into the Facebook group, the Scent Geeks Podcast Facebook group? Do you want to start with the post that Harley asked, if you've got it in front of you?
I have it right here,
We have sort of discussed this briefly before, haven't we?
So Harley Unra, I think, is how you pronounce this. Thanks very much for dropping by and helping us out with the arse this week. Harley writes, maybe this could be a subject for a future podcast. Correct. I'm just going to say that because it is. But this this has been something I've been thinking about recently. Why do I not wear the frags I hold in high regard more often? Am I subconsciously afraid I'll get tired of them? Is it a cost thing? That's an important point. One of my favourite scents of all time is Creed Viking. Good choice, I'm with you on that one. But for some reason, on the day-to-day, when I think about spraying it on, I end up grabbing a generic blue scent instead. So a dumb reach, I guess. As someone that's nearing the 50 bottle mark in his collection, with most of my bottles being 100 ml or more, I have plenty to choose from, but I'm going to make more of a conscious effort to wear my fragrances more often. Makes me think of what Manny from Cascade Fragrances always said, and at the end of his videos he just says, wear your fragrances, wear the ones that you love. And I agree with that to some extent, but we can delve into this a bit more, can't we, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to this. I mean, we've discussed this before. You brought up sort of a great analogy that you did. This is something we could put in inverted commas, but you said about it like being one of your favourite songs. You don't want to overplay it and then become sick of it. So there's that, isn't there, without doubt?
Yeah.
And then I think there's also a thing that some of your more favourite fragrances might be a bit more daring or interesting, where you don't want to, another thing, you might not want to wear them in the wrong crowd and get negative feedback, and then it almost like sort of ruin that fragrance a little bit for you. It might be like, sure, you might be a bit protective over it. Almost like if someone goes, oh, what are you wearing? That's a bit strong. And then you'd be like, oh, what? That's like my favourite. Don't say that. You might kind of, there might be that as well, maybe, a bit of vulnerability.
Yeah. I think so, yeah. And an important point raised in the question itself as well, about your favourite fragrance might be very expensive. So in the back of your mind, because how many times do we hear people say, oh yeah, I've got this expensive fragrance, but I've got the clone of it as well, which is what I just spray when I want to wear it day to day. So it's ridiculous. They've bought an expensive bottle of the genuine fragrance and they're wearing the clone instead.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that thing, isn't it, when like with people, you've got to, I guess it's hard, but you've got to, well, I could do what Manny says, but enjoy the things. If you've spent something on something that's nice, you need to be able to enjoy it. If you're not going to, like my brother's quite into his watches, so he's got like a couple of like quite expensive watches, but like one of them's like, I think it's like sort of $4,000 worth, which again, all relative to me, that's a lot of money. Some people would be like, well, that's actually quite a cheap watch, but you know, whatever. But he, like, where's it? I remember saying to him, it's like, oh, bloody hell, I'd be a bit scared to wear it. And he kind of said, well, yeah, but then what's the point in buying it? Like, you know, it's not an ornament.
Yeah.
He's like, you wear it to enjoy it. You want to enjoy these things. So, and I guess that's the same with your fragrances, really. But
yeah. There is that overplayed song thing, though, because the fragrances that you love, that are your favourites, that are special to you, you, personally for me anyway, I want to wear those, and I want to have that feeling of empowerment when I wear them. You know, like when you wear your favourite pair of shoes or your favourite shirt or you've just had your hair done or whatever, you go out and you're going into public and you've just got that extra bit of confidence, that extra bit of swag. And if your favourite fragrance adds to that, to give you that extra feeling of confidence and feeling empowered, then that's great. But if you wore that too much, would you lose that sort of special feeling that you get from your favorite fragrances? So it's about a balance. I think it's a balance. I think yes, you should absolutely wear the ones you love, but maybe just don't wear them as an everyday wear. I think yep, still go for your dumb reaches for your everyday wear, but maybe when it's an evening out, it doesn't have to be a special occasion. You could just be going to the cinema or maybe just going out to a pub. I think, yeah, spray your favourites on then in those situations. Don't be afraid of spraying the ones that you really love. But then, I mean, yeah, why not wear Viking every day for work? Because even if you do get tired of it, then there's many more fragrances out there that you can discover and fall in love with as well. So, you know, I guess
this for me as well, the sort of flip side of this is something I've discussed before, is like there's a lot of fragrances that I still own and have owned that are really good fragrances, but there's other ones in my collection that are better. And so it's like, well, why wear a 7 or 8 out of 10 when I can wear a 9 out of 10? So it's that thing as well. So I start then going, well, actually, no, if I love this fragrance that much, why do I need all these others? But then, like you say, I guess you don't want it to kind of ruin it. Because back in the day where we had 3 or 4 fragrances, like now, like Cool Water, I'm just almost sick to death of. CK1, it's like, oh, I've been through so many bottles of CK1 back in the day. So now it's like, I smell it, it's like, obviously my nose is probably a bit more refined now, but also it's like, oh, I'm done with it, you know? So it's like, I guess you don't want that to happen, but...
And a lot of times when you're going out into the public, I genuinely think this sometimes, I look at my fragrance collection, I think, oh, I could wear that amazing, neat, like something like Naxos, for example. And then I think, well, actually, the people around me would probably much prefer me to smell of a designer fragrance, like, you know, the most The Most Wanted. I got a compliment on that in the gym. I mentioned that to you, didn't I, Steve?
Yes,
got,
you did. You got a nice
got a little compliment from a couple of people at the gym this week. And they were loving it. I said, oh, writing it down. What is it? Where is it? And, oh, I love that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Are those people you know or strangers or what?
They work in the gym, so they're not okay. Mates.
So you know
anything,
of them, but, sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll often, if I'm in the type of situation or the type of mood where I want to be more commercial and mass appealing and I want to, maybe, you know, impress people, let's say, which is always nice. Not that I go out only for that reason, fishing for maybe I do, but anyway, I'll throw on a designer because I know that it's an easier wear and it's more likely to be appreciated and enjoyed by those around me as well, more so than a more complex niche fragrance. So I think that possibly comes into it as well.
It's funny because one of my friends I used to work with for my old company, I used to sort of talk to her because she knew I kind of did the whole YouTube thing. I was into fragrances. Quite often I'd kind of ask her what she thought to fragrances. But she was so stereotypical. She had a very kind of basic kind of appreciation for fragrances, which is nothing wrong with that. But she really liked Sauvage. She really liked like some Hugo Boss type fragrances. So then if I wore anything that she was like, nah, nah. And I mean, some stuff that I would say was really quite safe, she'd be like, nah, nah. So again, it's kind of like, yes, the sort of muggles, as we sometimes call them, do just prefer it to be those sort of shower gel ones. And you should wear a fragrance for you. But then conversely, especially if you're going to work or something, you don't want to be that guy that, you know, people think stinks or whatever. You don't want to be a person that's ended up sending in a fragrance fail story to this podcast, do you? You don't want to be that guy.
No.
I mean, we want you to be that guy, but...
Yeah, we do. But I think you can achieve a balance of both. Yes, wear things that you like, but you can pick a mass appealing, it might even be a niche fragrance, I don't know, but you could pick a mass appealing designer fragrance that you love. For example, for me, Zara Wanted by Night. And I know I love it, so I'm wearing it for me, but I know that it's likely to be appreciated by everyone else around me as well. So it's sort of, you know, when you want both things, you can perhaps reach for something that maybe isn't your all-time favorite, but you know is going to work for that situation.
It's interesting actually, because this week I've got like a two-day sales meeting, so it's like it's all business during the day, and then we're sort of, you know, going for a meal or whatever in the evenings and things, for like all the work people. And I am already, I don't know about you, if you've ever got like an event coming out, say it's like a wedding or you've got this thing, not one of the first things, but quite early on I start thinking, okay, what fragrance am I going to wear for that then? So I'm already thinking, today on this Sunday, like, okay, what fragrances should I take with me? Because I've got to commit to them and take them. I can't obviously take my collection because I'm staying away, basically. It's like an overnight job in hotels and things. So it's like, am I going to go safe or should I go a bit... And actually, the one I mentioned earlier, I've started thinking, oh, I've not worn L'Homme d'OEDP. That could be quite interesting to take with me. So I'm already thinking about it. So it is that trade-off.
Good question.
Anyway, we thought that was going to be a quick question and we've ranted for a while. The other one I wanted to shout out in the arse was Chris Carter. So I shall read his one out because I think this is quite interesting. He said, I realised that this may open up a gigantic can of worms, but I had an idea for a potential topic of discussion, whether on the podcast or just here in the group, if allowed. So this question is all about fragrance looks versus personality. So what perfume or perfumes do you have or have you had in your personal collection that have had the biggest discrepancy in terms of design of the bottle versus enjoyment of the scent itself? Have you ever hidden a cheap, tacky bottle to the back of the shelf despite absolutely loving the scent? Or perhaps regretfully sold a bottle you loved the look of because you didn't get on with the fragrance itself? For me, I absolutely loved, in capital letters, the classy Art Deco style and juice colour of the Tom Ford for Men bottle and kept it around for a good while for that alone, but ended up moving it on as I found the scent itself pretty meh. Similar for Chisardi's Riflesso. I don't know. I've never heard that said out loud. I don't know what that one is. Riflesso 2. In contrast, I find the smell of Moschino's Toy Boy. I think we've discussed how to pronounce Moschino in the past, but I'm going with that. Moschino's Toy Boy is so unique, creative, and interesting, but sweet lord, that bottle. And it's got some pukey faces. I mean, my partner is pretty understanding about this perfume obsession, but this is kind of pushing the boundaries. Not quite as bad But the Mugler Pure Line latex flask jobbies also really grind my gears.
I was going to say that. Yeah, I was going to mention those. Yeah.
What do you think? What are your biggest perfume design / scent discrepancies? Apologies if too off topic. Please do delete if so. Well, we didn't need to do that.
I love the Tom Ford bottles. I think they're great. But there isn't a discrepancy especially the private blend. I just love those little things. They just look like little apothecary bottles. And on the shelf, those little 50ml ones look great. But they all, you know, a lot of them smell really great too. With you on the Toy Boy, I do like the scent. It's good and interesting and artistic. But yeah, not a fan of that bottle. I've got to say, I would quite happily have that in a different... I don't mind it. I'm not embarrassed to have it on the shelf. But... yes, it's not in pride of place anywhere. No. To be noticed. So yeah, let me think. So
I mean, while you're having a little think, somebody did comment and respond. So said Mugler Pure Malt, probably could say for most of the Muglers or Mugler, I think, love the smell, but the bottle and the sprayer are poor.
Yeah, they are pretty tacky looking bottles, but you know what, I've sort of grown to like them in that sort of tacky way.
You know, like that weird cousin or uncle that you've just like, oh, that's just how they are. You you'd learn to love their flaws, sort of thing.
Yeah, so you forgive a lot because this, you know, they're great. The heart's in the right place, sort of thing. You know, so I feel like that about the Pure Line. That yeah, the bottles do look pretty garish. And the sprayers aren't the best in the world, but you know, you get a few of them lined up next to each other. They look all right. They stand out. They look different. But I wouldn't say they're a bit weird, I guess, for a perfume bottle. But I don't hate them at all. One that does spring to mind, and it perhaps might be a bit unfair of me to say this, but when Aaron Terence Hughes first launched his fragrances, the smells were sublime. I just remember smell like Santal Extreme, Onyx. I just remember smelling these, thinking, "Wow, these are seriously, you know, nice fragrances. Like, they smell expensive, they smell luxury," and I was really impressed with them. But the bottles, it was a stock bottle with a paper label that sometimes didn't quite glue on properly, and I really felt for him because he couldn't afford to do anything else at the time. That was sort of the best, and they weren't atrocious, but the bottles certainly did not reflect how nice the juice inside was. But I'm really glad now that Aaron, but he had to do that to get himself going. He got the business going, he got some money, and he reinvested that money in redesigning his bottles and getting better presentations. So he had to start there, and I'm pleased now that he's in a place where the bottles now more mirror the quality of the juice on the inside. But I remember thinking at first, oh, I hope he can get these sorted out soon, because they're not the best.
Yeah, I remember you saying, actually, this is going to be an example I would use. It's not that I'm that familiar, but I remember you saying, actually, I don't know, quite a few episodes ago, I remember you commenting on that one. I mean, one of my ones is a fragrance I've mentioned on the podcast before, but Spirit of Kings is kind of a house that they do clones, really. They're not marketed as such, but a lot of them smell like other things. So I've mentioned Arrakis before, which smells like Bulgari's Le Gemme Tiger, but they're all of their range, they have the same sort of bottles with slightly different colouring, and this little plastic fucking gem looking thing on the top of the lid, which looks so like, sometimes actually the images, this is probably where they do it, their sort of marketing images sort of do it justice, and the bottles look kind of cool and quite high end, and the bottle itself, remember, is sort of metallic, so it's quite a solid metal bottle, which is quite good, but the lid with this plastic gem on top. But again, when you just look at the photos and the marketing, they look sort of quite cool and classy, and like, oh, that's really high end, and then you get this plastic gem, it's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, plastic lids can really be a letdown in terms of presentation a lot of the time. They can, on a photo, they can look prestigious and high-end, but then when it turns up and the bottle's nice, the glass is nice and the label and all that, and then it's a little flimsy plastic cap, you're like, oh, really? Could you not just have, you know, gone the extra, even if it was added £5 to the cost of the fragrance? When you buy in bulk, then, you know, I just think, don't don't let the cap let it down, because it's the last little piece of the puzzle, isn't it? Why let that let your presentation down?
I mean, probably the house that gets the most stick for the bottles, or it's almost like renowned, it's like their thing now, is like Amarth, isn't it? Amarth really sort of, I think it's almost coming back to that analogy that I said about earlier with the fashion. It's like there's a safe, but there's a boring bottle, then it's quite safe. Oh, that's a bit more interesting. Yeah. That's a bit risky. Okay, you're trying really hard there, but oh no, you've gone too far. That looks fucking awful. That shit.
Yeah, they're and very that's, brush. Yeah, but they're not cheap.
Definitely skirt around that sort of outer ring of that circle there, Amarth, to be honest.
They don't look cheap or flimsy though. They're not that. They're not that. They're very bold and garish and maybe not very tasteful, you could argue, but I wouldn't describe them as cheap, because they're certainly hefty. There's a weight to them. They don't have flimsy caps or anything like that. But interesting designs. Yeah, I mean, I've come to love the out there designs, because they must go right, what ridiculous shape bottle can we go for our next fragrance release? Let's really get people talking. Let's go out, let's get it all out there. And I feel like they know what they're doing. I feel like they're just put it, I hope so anyway. I hope there's not someone designing those things going, this is the design to end all bottle designs. We are winning at presentation with this.
This is like an art award for this bottle. I think it's interesting, this topic though, about bottles. I think this also adds sometimes to the stigma of owning like clones. When I say clones, I mean from cloned houses such as like Perfume Parlor, Alexandria, or whatever, where they've all got the same bottles, like stock bottles, like you say, with labels on. I think some people that are a bit more into it want the whole experience. They want to have a nice, interesting, different bottle on there. So to have like a stock bottle with a label on there, it's not quite the full experience of a fragrance, if you see what I mean. They don't want to kind of have that on there. So I think that's another reason why some people, you know, want a nicer. That's why they'd probably rather go for like maybe a Mont Blanc Explorer rather than another Creed Aventus clone that is a generic clone that might actually be a better clone that's closer, but they'd almost go, well, at least it looks like its own sort of fragrance. It's got a nice bottle and it doesn't look like, I feel like I'm buying a clone. So yeah, I think that's part of it.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, your mates come round and you show them your fragrance collection, and you don't necessarily want to say, oh yeah, these are clones. Or, you know, once you start building up a fragrance collection, once you're wearing quite a few, this happened to me and I'm sure many other people, you start wanting your collection to look impressive, because they're on a shelf, they're out there, they're in the open. I know you should keep them in a dark cupboard, but where I store mine is in a darkened, it's where I film, so it's in a darkened room all day anyway. So, but I sort of want them to look nice when I walk in the room and look at my collection. I don't want to just see a bunch of boring stock bottles with paper labels. I want the Rogers and I want the Fragrance de Bois and the Nasamato bottles, because it looks cool. So there's definitely something in wanting your bottles to look nice on your shelf.
I've got a question actually for our audience. I'd love somebody to kind of post or respond. Either send me a message. It might be linked to a fragrance fail potentially, but I'd love to hear some feedback on people that, so you sort of said there, you know, your friends come around and you show them the collection. Like, there's not many people that do that, like normal people. It's only people in Fragcom that, you know, if George comes around to your house, you might go, oh, come and look at these like new bottles that I've got, where like a normal person probably wouldn't do that. But in my mind, I'm thinking, which is something that's never happened to me, because I've been with my wife for years before I got into this fragrance. But is anybody out there that's like a proper Fraghead that's got a decent collection, and then they've sort of, they've perhaps got a new, there's somebody new that they're seeing, it might be a new man, new woman, whatever, and then there's that point where they see your collection. Do you show it with pride? Are you a bit sort of like you hide it, but say they're staying over the night for the first time and then you go to sort of, you know, put on a bit of a spritz in the morning, are you a bit sort of almost conscious of it, or are you showing off with pride? And then how have they reacted? Have they gone like, what the fuck is going on, you've got 200 bottles there, what's going on? Or have they been like, oh, that's really cool? And like, I'd love to hear some stories about people's reactions to their collection, like for the first time, because I've never had that. So I was with my wife for years before I got into it, and then I started building my collection. Well, there must be people out there that are, you know, young enough and they're still dating or meeting new people, and they're showing them their collection for the first time. I'd love to know if there's any stories out there, like for the first reaction like, yeah. How's it gone down? You know, did it put them off? Did they never come back, or were they really interested, or did you hide it for a bit before you sort of showed them? You were a bit sneaky and sort of didn't show it off, or did you show it with pride? Or I'd love to hear some stories. There's got to be some stories.
That'd be great.
Out there.
Yeah. Collection first reactions.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Send them in.
Either send them as a sort of story and I'll read them out, or we'll start a thread in the Facebook group. But yeah, there's got to be some stories out there, and I want to hear. And I'm genuinely intrigued by this because I've never had this. So I don't know if, you know, if my wife ever comes to her senses and leaves me, and I'm left on the dating scene, I don't know how I would deal with it. I don't know if I'd sort of show it off with pride, or if I might just ease them into it a little bit, and kind of then, you know, once I'm a bit more comfortable, I'd sort of start sort of be revealing that weird hobby of mine. I don't know. So I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
Chris, what you been wearing, mate? What you been wearing?
Oh God, yeah, we're going to talk about that, aren't we? Flipping heck. Right, I'm always through these pretty quick. So as I mentioned, I wore Azaro the Most Wanted. I've been wearing again the Chronic Rouge Extreme, which I'm loving. Curacao Bay, again loving that from Jacques Fapp. I've been going through a few Rogers this week. So I've been wearing Oligarch, Harrods Pour Homme, Sweetie Oud. I mean, as you can imagine, they're Rogers, so they smell amazing. I wore a really good niche for all fragrance called Patchouli TB. I don't know what the TB stands for, actually, but it's in the style of Mancera's Red Tobacco, Parfum de Marly's Carlisle. So it's that sweet, slightly fruity but rich resinous tobacco-y type scent, really lovely. And a new brand has launched. I was part of a live online launch this week. It's called Milano Fragrance, and it is the two guys behind Mask Milano. They have released this new line of fragrances. Each fragrance is inspired by a different area of the city of Milan, sort of touching upon, you know, the history of the city as well. And they are much more affordably priced than the Mask Milano line. I think they're around about £100 for 100ml, which for a niche fragrance is very reasonable. And they smell great. I love them. Really interesting collection of fragrances. So look out for Milano Fragrance.
That's what
I've been wearing. How about you?
So I've not got too much to report on. I have done a full wearing now. I mentioned it a few weeks ago. I was kind of just sort of trying it. I'd done a couple of little testers, but I've given a full wearing earlier in the week for H24 from Hermes. I nearly said Ted Hermes then. It's almost like Ted Hermes is such a thing. It's almost like we've spoken before about, you just say like Jean-Paul Gaultier, and that's what people call Le Male. It's almost it's almost like Ted Hermes is the house, because it's everyone just knows Ted Hermes. So I nearly said that. That's a fragrance I've decided I really like to smell it on my skin, like in isolation, but wearing it, I found it got, I don't know, it's just got a little bit annoying actually. It wasn't bad, and the wife sort of was just like, this is a bit soapy. She was just like not too impressed, but so don't know about that one. So yeah, I won't be rushing out to my bottle, which is a shame, because actually on smelling it I quite like it, so I was thinking about it, but now after wearing it I'm like not so sure. Another fragrance I've been wearing is a brand new release from Lalique, which I mentioned last week. I went and stumped up and bought a bottle of Lalique's White in Black, purely off of the back that it supposedly smelt like Parfum de Marly's Leighton, which I love. And some people might go, well, if you love Leighton, why do you need to get something that smells like it?
But I was just going to say the same thing.
But then there's a bit of me that's like, what if it's an even better version of Leighton? If it takes Leighton and somehow improves it. That was my thinking.
For a fraction of the cost.
Yeah, I was thinking it could be cheaper, it could be better, I mean, I actually get really good performance from Leighton, but I was like, it could just be better. I need to know now. So curiosity killed the cat on that one, so I had to kind of get it. So I pulled the trigger, and I'll do a video on this, so I'm not going to talk too much. I will break down. There is some differences, but it definitely smells like Leighton. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it.
I'm looking forward to that video.
Yeah, I'll break down the sort of differences. They're relatively subtle, but they are there. And I'd say the sort of performance is a bit different as well. So I'll kind of talk about that. But it definitely smells like Leighton. And I was looking into, because you mentioned about Lalique White being supposedly like their take on Galloway. Well, when I was kind of looking into this and sort of researching it, actually, this is one of those situations, it could purely be coincidental, but I mean, we spoke before about the whole Mont Blanc Creed debacle.
Tit
I mean, George,
sort yeah, of thing,
sort
yeah.
of. We don't know if there's any sort of if it is again coincidental, if there's truth behind it, but George the Fragrance Apprentice did a video about this, how there was Creed sort of clone, well, we say clone, but they did it almost an inspiration of a Mont Blanc fragrance. Then Mont Blanc released a fragrance that Explorer, which is very much a take on Aventus. So this is a similar situation, because Lalique White was actually released in 2008 and Galloway from Parfum de Marly was released in 2014. So again, could purely be coincidence, but they're very comparable. But now in 2021, Lalique are releasing a fragrance that smells a lot like Parfum de Marly Leighton. So is it purely coincidence, or are they doing a bit of a tit for tat and getting their own back and going, okay, well, that's a very popular fragrance, we'll do a take on that? Or is it purely 100% coincidence? Who knows?
Shots fired in the fragrance world, you know. Brands are having sort of this little bit of warfare between them, going, well, if you're going to do that, we're going to do this.
I mean, that's what we want to think, don't we? Because it's just drama and it's entertainment, but it could purely be 100% coincidence. Or is there somebody that went, you know, this Leighton smell, they might not have done it on purpose, man, might have gone, oh god, I tell you what, I've wore Leighton the other day, it smells bloody good, can we do something that's, you know, inspired by it? Is there something that we could do with that and do our own version that smells, because this is a great fragrance? Have they done that, or is it purely a coincidence? Interesting. I'd love to know.
And be interesting to see what Lalique's next release might be, and if it is one that is similar to PDM, then, or vice versa even, then I guess we can more confidently say yes, there is a little bit of warfare going on there between the brands.
I mean, we don't need to repeat ourselves, but we've spoken before in the past that PDM has had some stick for sort of doing niche versions of other fragrances, haven't we? We discussed this on the podcast before, so perhaps they're not innocent, or perhaps they're against all coincidence. But this comes back to the full circle when we say about clones, and some people just front up and say, you know, we do clones and other people don't. And it's almost, is that better or worse? I don't know. So there we go. So that's what I've been wearing anyway.
Cool. Right.
But had a little bit of a few messages backwards and forwards this week, haven't we? Talking about fragrance, because we're geeks like that.
Oh,
and
yeah,
there was another fragrance. I sent you a message going, hold on, did you know about this fragrance? Because this completely fucking passed me by.
You were like, nope.
Didn't know about it. Do you want to say what it was and what you've done about it?
Yeah, so it's YSL's newest or latest La Nuit de l'Homme flanker, which is, what's it called? Blue Electrique?
Yeah, I don't know if it's La Nuit de l'Homme Bleu Electrique. But yeah.
So obviously a flanker to a flanker, because there was O Electrique first, so I guess this is sort of part La Nuit de l'Homme original DNA, part O Electrique DNA with a bit of sort of blue thrown in there, I guess. The sprinkling of the generic, maybe.
I mean, I guess if we're doing, it's almost like a flanker, a flanker, a flanker, if you're sort of going all the way back, aren't you? I guess there like L'Homme, La Nuit de l'Homme, and then obviously Electrique, and then I don't know how much. I mean, but
So many.
I literally just saw somebody post a photo of a bottle in a fragrance group. I was like, hold on, I've missed this. I started Googling it. There's a few videos in Fragcom done, and it's on Fragrantica. I'm like, what the fuck? I didn't know this about this. And I messaged you, and you were like, no, didn't know. So it's like, oh, shit. And then you've sort of jumped on it, and yes, because you've kind of pulled the trigger on it and got a bottle.
I did. Well, it was pretty cheap. I couldn't find it on a website, and then you sent me the link. I was like, okay, yeah, just snap a little 40ml of that up just to have a sniff, see what it's about, maybe do a video on it. Because Ashton did a video. He really enjoyed it. He said he sort of was expecting not to like it, almost didn't want to like it, because it's, you know, the latest in a long line of flankers, which most of them haven't ever been as good as the, you know, as La Nuit de l'Homme anyway. But he liked it. He said it performed well, and his wife liked it and all that. So and I think you'd seen another couple of videos that people gave it a positive review, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I've sort of done a bit of research on it, and I've watched a couple of videos or whatever. But in short, I mean, I think shout out to Dan Talk Sense, I think was one of the first people to review it, actually. I think it was one of the first videos on YouTube. A lot of people seem to say, it sounds like it's a fairly safe buy, actually, blind buy, because it smells supposedly a lot like the original formulation of La Nuit de l'Homme, and then it's just a little bit of a sort of fresher, more modern version as it dries down. It's got a bit more of that O Electrique kind of vibe as it dries down, but it's not too heavy. So it's meant to perform really well, which is, I mean, that's fucking almost like an oxymoron, isn't it? Like, yeah. Louis Delon performing well is like, what?
Hold I on. Do have a decant of 2012 Louis Delon, which is supposed to still be one of the better formulations. So if I can find that and dig that out, I'll be able to, yeah, do a comparison.
Yeah, I've got a 2011, I think mine is. And it's definitely, I mean, I've spoke about this before. I've done a full breakdown comparison of the sort of batches. But it definitely smells sort of heavier and thicker and fuller. But it doesn't, it only outperforms it by a little bit on me. It's not like, I think this sort of mythical thing, people are like, oh, the, you know, it's not what it was, it's water nowadays. Back in the day, it was like, I think it's this one of those things. It's
it was
like,
a beast.
Yeah, it gets built up. It's like, you sort of misremember. And it's like, well, I remember it being stronger. And then the next person's like, well, yeah, it's definitely strong. And then it's like, oh, it was absolute beast mode. And but I was a bit disappointed in that. I was hoping basically I'd get a full day, but it's not much. It's the performance isn't dramatic. So yeah, don't be buying a vintage batch because you think it's going to be a great performer is my key tip on this one.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Yeah, I'll get it. I'm looking forward to smelling it and seeing how it performs.
Yeah, no, I'm tempted to get a bottle myself, but I just bought that Lelie. I was like, do I need another Lenouis? I've got the vintage batch, so a bottle of the vintage. So yeah, but looking forward to your take on that one. So hopefully we'll speak about that on maybe next week's episode if you get it in time.
Yeah, should do.
Cool. Anything else you want to shout out you've seen this week? I know you've been away and been busy, so maybe not.
Not really. I mean, I've not watched much. Oh, I did enjoy. I really enjoyed the live stream that Mr. Cologne 76 and Justin Copeland did. They were having a very articulate, eloquent discussion about should reviewers be compensated for their work, pretty much by getting free bottles. There's this ongoing thing, isn't there, that, you know, should people who make YouTube videos get free bottles? So they were just, I'm not going to go into that because we've talked about this before, but if that's still up on Glenn's Instagram, I guess the live stay up, or is it just 24? I don't know, maybe he'll repost it somewhere. But it was really good. The questions were great. Engagement with the audience questions were good, and Glenn and Justin just talked so clearly and concisely about the subject, and I think they said it way better than I could, so I really enjoyed that. So if you can check that out, if it's still around, then see if Glenn's reposted it on his Mr. Cologne 76 account. But cool, I enjoyed that. But other than that, I've not really watched any other fragrance content, or I don't think seen it. I've seen a lot of Jeremy thrusting his pelvis and his stomach in and out on Instagram, and I guess they've reposted TikTok videos, aren't they? I've seen a lot of that, Jeremy and Tighty Whities this week.
Yeah, I'm seeing
really
a lot of that because I think they often get shared in, I think he knows what he's doing, but they often get shared in like Facebook groups and things, kind of because people almost meme it and they're like, oh my god, look at the state of this, and that's almost Jeremy's success is off of that, isn't it? It's that crazy guy. It's like, what does he do next? I think, yeah.
Yeah.
But I've got just an image burnt in my brain of his knob flopping around. It's like, literally, you could see it in these tighty whities. I'm like, Christ, I can't unsee that now. It's like, Jesus, mate. Like,
It is pornographic, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, well, I had some stick this week for just going a bit topless in my little intro. I certainly won't be going that fast. There's no need to worry on that one. There would definitely be not much flopping around in that video. But he's a man in himself. We're not
he's a one, isn't one. He? Old Jezzer, he's a one, eh? Yeah, rapscallion.
Shall we, if there's nothing else to say, shall we go into a bit of a happy ending? I've had a few submissions.
Yeah,
so,
finishes off, Steve.
So thank you everybody for sending in your fragrance fails and scent stories, etc. We love them. I've got a few like coming up in the next few weeks, so do keep sending them in. If they don't get read out, they will, I promise. And we definitely want to hear about when you first showed your collection to a potentially new partner, so we definitely want to hear about those, so I'm looking forward to those. But anyway, this one comes in from somebody that has been in our arse before. It still makes me laugh, I'm sorry, but it will get tired. But Mark Tattersall, he's sent in, I think he actually won a bottle, I think Mark was one of our winners of something.
He won because
I've got in the sort of list here, he won the Swede off ones. So yeah, it'd be good to kind of get some feedback on him. But anyway, Mark sent this in. Hi Steve, hope you're well, mate. Today's podcast inspired me to share a scent story / happy ending, kind of. So my 4-year-old daughter loves playing with my fragrances. Can we clean your smells, daddy, she asks, which is, that's adorable. So we go through taking them out of the out of the unit I store them in, wiping them and putting them all back. That's a nice, lovely little sort of fragcom bonding session with the sort of daughter there. So takes his bottles out, gives them a clean, and puts them back in. Great, he's got a trained well.
Yeah, I could do a training my kids up to do a similar thing.
I know, it's great. She asks about them all, and it's amazing the things she remembers about them too, which is that's like lovely. Kids just take in information, don't they? They just love like fucking top trump cards and all that sort of stuff. So it's almost like that. Anyway, then comes the time I say, right, time to put them all back now. We need to go and do whatever. Last week, she was disagreeing about putting them back and wanted longer and to arrange them how she wanted to. Oh, Dad, you bellend, she said.
What?
After the 5-second pause for my disbelief and the shock on her face as she realised she had said something she shouldn't have, I then, as calmly as I could, said, that's not a very nice thing to say to someone, and I don't want you to say that ever again, darling. Okay, okay, she said. My wife probed her further later, and it turns out the nursery slash childminder she goes to has an older boy who has taught her the phrase. Rest assured, I will be doing the dad thing and following up on that this week. After the initial shock of being called a bellend for my poor fragrance arrangement, I love that he's trying to move back. She's like, oh, no, not that way, you bellend. I did see the funny side. After everyone I told just had fits of laughter more than concern. These things are going to happen, but at 4, hey ho. Many thanks for the podcast. Big love from Bradford. I actually replied to him because I said I had a similar sort of situation. It wasn't fragrance related, but I remember literally after my son, who's now he's one of the oldest in the year, so I think he was 4 when he first started school, and he then sort of turned 5 that month. But literally, after 1 week at school, he was just at the dinner table and was just talking, and then he just went, "Oh fuck," and we were like, sorry what? And he was like, fuck, and he was like, oh, Terence told me that word or something. No, it was someone else, but anyway, another kid at school. I'm like, okay, so we had to do the whole thing. We didn't want to, you know, make a big deal over it and kind of put stigma on it, so then it almost does it in defiance or anything like that, though he's pretty good in that sort of regard. So we just, it's similar to Mark, we just explained that's not a nice word to use, you don't use that, and you know, only sort of naughty adults use that word or whatever.
Yeah, we've had the same conversation with ours.
It's
naughty,
so funny.
Adults.
Yeah, exactly. He just picked it up, but they just learn these things. But yeah.
Yeah.
That's two, because last week I think was from Dean. It was his daughter that sort of had a go at him, so he could have said about spraying the perfume in his mouth. So we've got a few kiddie ones coming in there.
Brilliant. Keep them coming, guys.
Thank you. Yes, so that's it. Chris, do you want to say your farewells, maybe shout out our sponsor and things?
Yeah, I'll do a quick sponsor shout out. So if you want to be in with the generous giveaway that Kajal do with us every month, they give away a full bottle and a discovery set. So there's two winners, one for each of those things. If you want to be in with a chance, you just go along to their Instagram, find their post, which is probably, 2 to 3 weeks? I think we're coming up to maybe... Yeah, about 3 weeks old, maybe. So go back a bit down the feed, find the post of the bottle that has the Scent Geeks actually written onto the photograph, repost that, tag Kajal in, and you are in with a chance to win it. So go ahead and do that. And then we will shout out the winners. Every month when Kajal pick the winners, we then shout them out on the podcast. So that's it from me. Thanks, Steve. It's been good to check in with you and get geeky again this week. Thanks for listening, geeks. And tune in next week.
Oh, thanks, Chris. I really appreciate that. It's been fun as always. And I'm looking forward to that Le Nuit de l'Homme. I want to see that through. Thanks, everybody. Do keep sending in your stories and your Ko-fis. As I say, that's been a bit quiet on that. So do please, if you can, keep supporting the podcast through the Ko-fi. You can just £3 helps us kind of towards admin fees and things. And for the Kajal winners, we've said this before, but nobody's ever kind of followed up and got in touch and give us much feedback or even a little soundbite. It'd be great to hear from the winners. So if you've won a bottle of Kajal, do kind of let us know, your feedback, your partner's feedback or whatever. It would be great to kind of get a little review or something if you're that way inclined. You could send it via text or a voice note and we might sort of stick it in the podcast. So other than that, thank you everybody for listening and supporting the podcast. We love you all dearly and we will see you same time, same place next week. Take care.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.